In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things came into being through him, and without him not one thing came into being. What has come into being in him was life, and the life was the light of all people. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overtake it. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to testify to the light, so that all might believe through him. He himself was not the light, but he came to testify to the light. The true light, which enlightens everyone, was coming into the world. He was in the world, and the world came into being through him, yet the world did not know him. He came to what was his own, and his own people did not accept him. But to all who received him, who believed in his name, he gave power to become children of God, who were born not of blood or of the will of the flesh or the will of man, but of God. And the Word became flesh and lived among us, and we have seen his glory, the glory as of a Father's only Son, full of grace and truth. John testified to him and cried out, "This was he of whom I said, 'He who comes after me ranks ahead of me because he was before me.' From his fullness we have all received grace upon grace. The law indeed was given through Moses. Grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. No one has ever seen God. It is only the Son, himself God, who is close to the Father's heart, who has made him known." That is the opening to the Gospel of John. And it's such a wonderfully dense and theologically and philosophically rich piece of writing that introduces the reader to most of the key things about Jesus Christ, which would then be narrated through the remainder of the Gospel. So welcome to another episode of Isms and Schisms, where I try to demystify, de-pretensionize, de-ivory tower various issues and words and concepts in Christian theology and history. My name is Aaron Chidsey, and the word we're looking at right now is Christology, which is the study of Chris and the impact of the many Chrises upon Hollywood and science fiction. Actually, no, that's a completely different podcast. This one, Christology, is the classic Sunday school answer, Jesus. I don't know why we pronounce it Christology instead of Christology, or Christianity instead of Christianity. Maybe we should actually be calling him Jesus Christ. Doesn't have quite the same ring to it, but whatever, let's just get into it. This is the study of Christ. For obvious reasons, the study of Christ, is a very, very big topic. So this is going to be an introduction to the study of Jesus Christ, and in later episodes we'll get into the nitty-gritty. Usually, Christology is broken up into two key components, who Jesus was and what Jesus did. And then both of those have several sub-components, but right now we'll just explore some of the basic key theological aspects of both. And later episodes will probably refer back to this episode. So let's begin with who Jesus was. Occasionally, you might hear someone say that Jesus actually never existed, that the Jesus Christ portrayed today by the church reflects more of a King Arthur legend. We don't have time to explore that argument right now, but in general, that statement has no historical or logical ground to it. As far as evidence goes, the existence of Jesus is as good, if not better, as any other person we know of in the ancient world. Of course, things do get a little bit tricky when we consider all the theological aspects of this Jesus, which brings in a whole lot of other religious, historical, philosophical issues. But what we know for certain is that he was a human being. That might sound a little strange. What else would he be? An alien? a porcupine? But it's absolutely essential to recognize that Jesus Christ was a human being who lived and breathed, had a family, had a life. He had a job. He was a carpenter. He was fully human. He experienced precisely what it meant to be a human. He got angry. He got tired. He learnt things. He grew. He got scared. He got sad. The author of the Epistle to the Hebrews stated, he had to become like his brothers and sisters in every respect so that he might become a merciful and faithful high priest in the service of God. He had to become human in every respect. In fact, he was more human than any other human. He was the humanest human ever to human, and that's significant when we consider the fact that according to the Bible and 2,000 years of theological tradition, Jesus was also God. The passage that we began this episode with states that in the beginning, the Word was with God and was God and lived among us. In other words, became human. In other words, Jesus is that Word who is God. The author of Colossians states, for in him, in Jesus, the whole fullness of deity dwells bodily. If you go back to the episode on the Imago Dei, we touch on this a little bit, that Jesus is the image of the invisible God, the exact imprint of God's nature. That he was God and became human, this is what is called the incarnation, which the great author C.S. Lewis calls the greatest miracle of all, that God took on human flesh. We've already explored some of this in the episode on Trinitarianism, particularly Jesus' relationship with the Father and the Spirit. But again, there is so much more here that we can unpack, and hopefully we will unpack it in later episodes. But he was God, and he was human, and he bore human flesh. He was born, he lived, and he died. But another thing to consider here is that some of the biblical passages that we've already discussed suggest that Jesus existed before he was human. He had some sort of pre-existence where he didn't have to pay tax, where he didn't have to make sure he drank enough water each day, and where he wouldn't wake up with a sore neck because he had the wrong pillow.
Ouch!
This pre-existence makes sense if he is God, but it's nevertheless a weird concept to try to wrap our heads around, and there are many complicated philosophical, metaphysical implications to this claim that theologians have debated for a long, long time. And much of this has to do with what he was able to do and how much he knew. Did he know the answers to the big questions of life when he was a baby and yet still had to have 10 minutes of tummy time? Would he have known how to build a cold fusion reactor as a toddler when you're just trying to change his nappy? If they had nappies back then. Why didn't he warn us about pollution and what that might do to our climate? We'll explore some of these issues later because they're complicated and also pretty interesting. Personally, I don't think he knew everything, because then he wouldn't have been human. Simple. The act of learning, growing, making mistakes is essential to what it means to be human. I'm 100% certain that Jesus had temper tantrums, was immensely proud of himself when he learned how to walk, picked up some habits from his parents, and pushed the boundaries as a teenager. And I'm completely okay with that. If he didn't do those things, he wouldn't really know what it would mean to be a human. But aside from that, he was also given a bunch of pretty important titles. Christ, the Greek word for Messiah or anointed one. Lord, which could mean a leader in general, but when used in the Bible is usually used to refer to God. God's name, Yahweh, is usually translated into English as Lord. So to call Jesus Lord is essentially to call Jesus God, the same God as the Hebrew Bible. The Word as we read in John 1, which recalls the creative power of God, as in God spoke the world into creation, but also is connected to the Jewish idea of wisdom and recalls Proverbs 8. He is also called the Son of God, which is sometimes used in connection with Jesus' divinity, but the title is not always used in that way. There were some in the Old Testament, including David and Jeremiah, who were described as God's sons. So it's probably to do with having been sent by God, being the representative of God, or being the image of God. In any case, it does recall the promise made to David and implies Jesus' royal nature. And then he is called the Son of Man, which probably has more to do with his divinity than the title Son of God, because Son of Man is an eschatological term. Go back and listen to the episode on eschatology if you don't know what that word means. But the phrase is used in Daniel and elsewhere in connection with divine judgment, the sort of judgment that only God could bring. And Jesus is the one who brings that judgment. Son of David, referring to Jesus' descent from King David and the promise made to David that one of David's ancestors would rule for eternity. Jesus is the Lamb of God, the light of the world, a new Adam, King of the Jews, King of kings, Lord of lords, Rabbi, Master, Emmanuel, and a handful of others that we could explore in a later episode. But hopefully that gives a basic sense of who he was and is. So then let's move on to what he did. He did a lot, and a lot was done to him. But during his ministry, which began when he was about 30 years old, he basically was a teacher. He was often called a teacher by people in the New Testament. And so he was well respected and liked by many. Many people would come and hear his sermons.
You know what, friends? Give, and it shall be given unto you.
We might call him an itinerant teacher, meaning he would travel around and preach and teach in various locations. This was not uncommon at the time, as there were itinerant preachers, teachers, and philosophers who lived this sort of life. But Jesus developed a following and was also called Rabbi or Rabuni, which meant teacher in Aramaic. But a rabbi was much more than that in Jewish tradition. Disciples would live, breathe, and eat with their rabbi. They would do everything that their rabbi would do and tell them to do. And they would do it until they became a teacher of the Jewish law themselves. As he was going around, Jesus performed miracles. Now again, this was not especially uncommon at the time, or at least claims of miracles were not uncommon. It was believed that various people could perform miracles. The man Simon Magus was one of these people, who is recorded in Acts chapter 8, where it is said he amazed the people with his magic, hence his name, Simon Magus. Now, I kind of like to imagine him doing some close-up magic and maybe some card tricks, pulling a rabbit out of a hat, but I think the text is implying something much more than that. Tradition also calls him a sorcerer. But the difference with Jesus and then with the apostles is that the Bible uses these miracles performed by Jesus and his apostles to point to something much bigger, to point to Jesus's authority. The Gospels recount these miracles with very particular purposes, to tell us something specific about who Jesus was and what he was doing. So for example, when he calms the storm, it shows that he has authority over the world, over nature, over creation. We might also talk about Jesus' threefold office, that he was prophet, so he was the voice of God. Priest, in that he intercedes between God and humanity.
Forgive me, Father, for I have sinned.
And king, that he is the rightful ruler of all creation. All other kings and rulers and emperors was simply a parody of the true king, who is Jesus, the King of Kings. But of course, what he is probably most known for is his crucifixion. He died a tortuous death in the most shameful method the Romans could throw at him. For the Romans, crucifixion was a deadly, deadly tool that was used to prevent revolutions. It was considered so shameful that a Roman citizen could not be crucified. But yet, Jesus is crucified, and he is crucified unjustly, unfairly. Pontius Pilate himself, the Roman governor of Judea at the time, knew that it was unjust. Because it is said that he washed his hands and he basically handed Jesus over to the people. And the people wanted crucifixion. After his death, he was buried. And then 3 days later, or perhaps on the third day, the texts differ on this timeline, he rose from the dead. The tomb was found empty and Jesus appeared to his disciples and others. So his crucifixion and resurrection are obviously immensely significant. And there's a huge amount of theology here that we just don't have the time to really fully explore. But basically, as they reflected on Jesus' death and resurrection, the early Christians came to believe that Jesus bridged the gap between God and humanity, making relationship with God possible and doing away with the problem of sin. I recognize that that's a hugely generalized statement. So here's what Paul says. He was handed over for our trespasses and was raised for our justification. And we know that Christ, being raised from the dead, will never die again. Death no longer has dominion over him. The death he died to sin once for all. But the life he lives to God. Following his resurrection, he spent some time with his followers, performing various other miracles, appearing to various others, and then he ascended into heaven. He sits at the right hand of God and continually intercedes for us. As the author of Hebrews states, "Since then, we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God. Let us hold fast to our confession. For we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but we have one who in every respect has been tested as we are, yet without sin. Let us therefore approach the throne of grace with boldness, so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help in time of need." So I hope that's helpful and interesting and a good introduction to the study of Christ to Christology. It's a really interesting topic, and there's so much to it. The resurrection is a particular interest of mine, so hopefully we can chat about that more in the future. If you enjoyed this episode, I would really appreciate it if you told someone about this podcast, or if you rated and reviewed, you know, all of that fun stuff. Check out the Instagram, leave a comment, tell me what you think about this topic, and if you have a particular ism or schism or general theological query, let me know and I'll see what I can do. This episode was recorded on the traditional lands of the Whadjuk Noongar people. I look forward to examining more isms and schisms with you.